So we're now on Daf Gimel Amid Aleph, and we're going to begin a Mishnah. And the subject of this Mishnah is the law of Shvius with regard to Ibur Shana. So we learned in the previous Mishnah, which was the first Mishnah in Masechta Shkalim, that the Shluchei Beis Din are sent out on the 15th of Adar for a number of different reasons. So again, if you just flip back quickly to the Mishnah, we have all sorts of Tzarchei Rabin, we have Tikkun Drachim, Rechovos, Mikvos, and so forth. And one of them is Yotzim Af Al HaKilayim, which means that the Beis Din is going to oversee the observance of Kilayim. And as we go through the sugya, just to get the sociology, it seems that amongst the various challenges that Jewish people faced in terms of observance, one of the greatest challenges was Kilayim. And it was like, you know, the tzaddikim were very careful about Kilayim to make sure that they didn't plant any Zeroyim near the vineyards and so forth and so on back in their fields. It was an agricultural society. But unfortunately, it seems like the rank and file citizen was quite laid back about Kilayim, and there were many takanos that were instituted by the Batei Dinim to oversee the observance of Kilayim and make sure that people would not violate Kilayim. So the Shluchei Beis Din, again, I can't imagine how many there were. It couldn't be that there were a couple of them. There would have to be a whole team of Shluchei Beis Din here, because they were sent out to all the fields and all the orchards to make sure and guarantee that there was no planting of Kilayim. Now again, we're talking about the 15th of Adar, and that's the end of the winter, and it's the beginning of the spring. This is the period of time in which people are planting their fields, and perhaps the planting season had started earlier, but at this point, you're already seeing that the tzmachim, you know, the growth is already being produced. And apparently, there was a lot of violation, a lot of hanky-panky about Kilayim. So the Shluchei Beis Din went out there to make sure that there was no Kilayim. And that was part of the Takon of Chachamim. Om Rabbi Yehuda says the following, Barishona. So let's take a break here and focus on what's going on. Barishona means that the takana of Beis Din went through various stages. And it got more and more severe as time went on, and it became more rampant amongst the people that they were being lax about Kilayim. Until the point is going to be, which we'll see at the end of this whole stage, that Beis Din is actually going to confiscate fields because they were in violation of Kilayim. And the question that we're going to, this is the main question for today, is going to be, what authority does Beis Din have? By what powers can they actually remove the ownership, the private ownership? You know, we believe in a capitalist society, so everybody owns their own fields. And how does Beis Din operate to remove the ownership of a field for a person who is in violation, deliberate violation of the laws of Kilayim? But that's going to be stage three. So first we're up to stage one. What happens at stage one? On the 15th of Adar, annually, Beis Din sends out the Shluchim, and they oversee what goes on. And lo and behold, they found that, we'll call him Reuven, is violating Kilayim. Now what does that mean? It could mean one of two things. Either it means that he planted Zeroyim and Geffen near each other in close proximity, or it might mean that the whole business was not deliberate, but he's being what's called Mekayim Kilayim. Mekayim Kilayim means that he's allowing it passively to go on. You know, he's not doing anything to be Oker Kilayim. There are two different Isurim in Kilayim. One Issa is to plant Kilayim, that's an Issa Zriya. And there's another Issa called Kiyum HaKilayim. You're not allowed to let the Kilayim grow and produce this mixture of Zeroyim and Geffen. So the Beis Din in the first round, chronologically, they would run around to the fields, and if they saw kelayim, they would remove the kelayim. Now again, this is at an early, relatively early stage in growth. You know, the harvest season is much later on, around Sukkot time. But already now, Beis Din can see, because of the proximity, that there is going to be kelayim. So what did they do? They took the liberty of being oker the kelayim. And here we have to understand, again, there are agricultural variables here, but fundamentally, the field was dedicated for X, whether it's Zroim or whether it's Geffen. And Y is the other min that's creating kelayim. So what the Shluchei Bezin would do is they would remove, they would uproot the other min, the second min. Okrim, and what did they do with that second min, the min that is generating kelayim? Mashlichim lifneihem, they would throw it in front of them. Which means that at stage number one, they didn't dispose of the kelayim. At this point, all they felt they needed, the, so to speak, the power that they were wielding, you know, the shield that they were wielding over the heads of the Balei Asados, was, we're going to embarrass you publicly. We're going to uproot anything that could perhaps be kelayim, and that's going to embarrass them. And I'm interpreting this Gemara, this Mishnah, based on the Me'iri. And we're going to leave those growths, those tzmachim, those whatever is produce, we'll call it produce, tzmachim. And there's no Iser Hana from kelayim. So that after the, you know, this public demonstration of, you know, of going into the fields and ripping out the kelayim. Again, I don't know exactly how they did this, with what, how they engineered this, with what machinery exactly. Because with bare hands, I can't believe that they could be oker kelayim. And they left it exactly where it was. Which means that the Bilim, after swallowing the pill of being embarrassed, they can go ahead and pick up the kelayim and benefit from them. Because at least on a Doraisa level, kelayim is not Isuri Hano. Kelayim is an Isur Zriya, but not an Isur Hano. So just to read the language of the Me'iri, Kedeshi is Baishu, Balei Asados, Biroz Kulam, this is a public spectacle, Shenimtsu Bistehem Bisodoseim Kelayim. Okay. But now, here's an edition of the Bar Tanura on this Mishnah. The Bar Tanura says, Hinichu lebalei sados lehenos mitzomchei haklayim. They didn't confiscate the kelayim. They left it after it was removed from the ground for the balei sados. Kevon shemin haTorah klai hakerem mutarim behano. They're mutar b'hano. Okay. That's stage number one. Now, you and I would have said that at that point, the Chachamim, having instituted this annual pull-out-the-kelayim activity, would have solved the problem. And the people would get the message that they've been embarrassed publicly by allowing this to go on, in which case they're being Mekayim Kelayim passively because the kelayim are growing in their fields. And now the Beis Din is coming in front of Am V'Eda publicly and removing the kelayim. Didn't do it. And now we're up to stage number two, Misharabu or Ovre Avera. What happened was, and now I'm basing myself on one of the super commentaries on the Mishnah that's quoted here, the Tiferes Yisrael. And by the way, in another shir, I'm learning Kodshim, and Tiferes Yisrael is just over and over and over again. In any event, the Tiferes Yisrael here on our Mishnah makes the following comment. Misharabu ovre avera vayu mal'ivim hes hashluchim. They would publicly, brazenly, boldly embarrass the shluchim. And they would say, you know what? We're very happy. You are doing our work. Why? Smechem hayu b'maisei ha-shluchim. Again, I'm going to give you a little bit of a preview of what's coming up in the Gemara. Why were the Balei HaSodos happy applauding the action of the shluchim? Because the shluchim, for the most part, were taking out of the ground the min, we'll call it tosefes, I'm making up that term, and the work of the Balei HaBatim was being done by the shluchim. Why? Because they were removing, which is called Menakesh, right? Menakesh is one of the toldos of the other melachos on Shabbos, and Nikush means to remove that which is bothering and interfering the growth of the produce. Now, since every field is dedicated for, we'll call it a primary produce, the secondary produce, which is now causing kelayim, which is no problem to the Ovri Avera, they're not bothered by that. It's the Shluchei Bezdin that are bothering of that. Because the mitzvah on Bezdin is lafrushe misura, to make takonos. But they were very happy. Why? Because this is an automatic built-in nikush. This is great. I'm going to benefit from the fact that the Bezdin is removing that second min, which is a tosefes, and is in effect, prematurely impacting on the growth of the ikar, of the main min. Okay, so now we're up to stage two, in which the Bezdin, by virtue of a takana, has to make a more profound, a more radical move. And what's that? Hayu mashlichim lidrachim. The shluchim, instead of ripping out that growth, which has a value to it, again, it's good to get it out of the ground, but even so, it has a value, whether it's grains, whether it's grapes, and could be that it's vegetables. At least the balabatim had access to them. So in stage number two, mashlichem lidrachim, they didn't suffice with removing that second min by uprooting it, but they put it out in the public area, on the roads. And as a result, the Balei HaSodos could not benefit from this. And even so, they were still happy. Why? And this is going to lead us to stage three in the Takana, which is the most important stage for our discussion today. In the ultimate calculation of pluses and minuses, assets and defaults and deficits and so forth, it was ultimately in the best interest of the Balei HaSodos to remove the second min as an act of nikush, even at the expense of throwing that second min to the wind and putting it out for the Ovrei Drachim to pick up. And therefore we get to the third stage of the Takana. Hiskinu shiyu mafkirim es kol asoda. At this point, you've crossed all red lines, and Bezdin made a decision, a Takana, that if you're going to continue in this way, and you're going to insult the shluchim and laugh on the sidelines and say, I'm gloating out of happiness, joy, you're doing my work by doing my nikush and clearing out this stuff from my sada, then we're going to undermine your ownership on the field itself, and we're going to declare your fields as hefker. And the whole sugya of our Gemara here in Masechta Shkolim is about the authority of Bezdin. What authority, by what mechanism do they have the ability to take someone's ownership over a field, you can imagine what a field is worth, and declare it hefker? Mafkir es kol asod. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara now quotes a brisa. Tani, we learned in a brace. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Barishona, Hayu Okrim, Umashlichen Lifnean. So this brace is a further elaboration of what we already saw in the Mishnah. Stage one, Bezdin, the Shluche Bezdin would uproot that which was creating Kelayim, that Tosefis Min, and they would throw it in front of the Balabatin, the Balei Asodin. Hayu Smechim. They were happy for two reasons. Number one, Shtei Smachos. Achash Hayu Menachshim, Shedoseyem, by removing the extra Min, that was called Mikush, because that was interfering with the growth, the healthy produce of the growth of the main Min, the Ikar Min, and Achas. And then they had a second benefit that they were happy about, Shoyu Nenim in Akalayim, because whatever was Kalayim was removed and placed in front of them, and they could benefit from it, because as we said before, Kalayim is not Osir Mahna. So they would take all this stuff that was uprooted, and they would feed it to their animals, and it was great animal food. Okay. Now we're up to stage number two. Misha Rabu Ovrei Avera. Now, here, in this brisa, we have a commentary, and again, Rabbo said, when we have time, I'd love to give one shiur just on the history and the biographies of all these different Pirusha. But anyway, I'm going to present to you now the commentary of the Rivan, one of the Balei HaTosfos. Again, this is a Ksav Yad that was lost for centuries. Anyway, he writes that Ovrei Avera, not the way we said in the Mishnah, you know, they were just laughing and scoffing at the Shluchim. This is much worse. The Ovrei Avera, says the Rivan, Hoyu zorim haklayim lechatchila bekavana kikilayim. Not only were they in violation of kiyum kilayim, they even violated the zriya and the netiyah of kilayim. They were zorim klayim bekavana. That's his interpretation. Now, I'm not sure who exactly disagrees with this interpretation of Ovrei Avera, but the other commentaries say, Samchulem besadoseim kilayim velo nizdarzuli okrom. In other words, they weren't worried about kiyum kilayim, they didn't go as far as the Rebbe Van explains it, that they were zorea kilayim bechavana tchila, but they were mekayim kilayim, and they said, you know what? The Shluchei Bezdin are going to remove the Kelayim. So we're not our Varyanim. We're not real sinners deliberately. We're waiting for the Shluchei Bezdin to do the work of removing the Kelayim. So they played a sort of a non-active role over here. They said, look, we're planting Lamazugan grapes, and if there are some grains that are growing in close proximity, we don't care about that. We didn't plant it deliberately. And if you talk about Kiyum Kalayim, we're going to rely on the Shluchei Bezdin, they'll remove it. And now we get to the second stage. First stage was the Shlichu Lefaneihem, and then the Balei Asada would pick it up and feed their animals. Hayu Mashlichim Al Adrachim. Now we get to the second stage, that the Shluchei Bezdin pulled out the Kalayim and they threw it in the grounds. And it was on the highway, so either people would stop and pick it up, which is okay, or people would just trounce on it. Rom simhayu, whether it's the agalot, the wagons with the horses and so forth, or the people, they would step on these. So the Balei Asada now were taking a loss, in the sense that kalayim they could no longer feed to their animals. And this was the more radical approach of the takana of the shluchim. Afal Piken, even this second level, where they removed the smachim, the kalayim, in such a way that there would be no benefit whatsoever for the Balei Asada, wouldn't they finally get the message that they shouldn't be allowing kalayim either? Certainly not planting kalayim deliberately, or even allowing the kalayim to grow. Hayismechim, you know what? They still were in the plus rather than in the minus. They were willing to forego whatever value that Tosefes Min would have, and let it go to the rubbish bin, you know, to the drachit. But they still gained Shoyim and Akshin Tosefes. That was the positive benefit, because Nikush, they didn't have to bother taking out that min, which would impede the growth, stunt the growth of the main min. And that's called Malachas Nikush. Let the Shluchim do that for us. It's Malachah Nasis Al Yidei Achir. At this point, this situation of Kiyum Kilayim was intolerable. It was out of hand, as we would say. Hiskinu Shiyu Mafkirim Kol Hasode Kula. How? How could they be Mafkir someone's Sode? Okay, he's an Avaryan. We'll soon see about Shvius. There were cases where they violated Shvius, and Bezdin would exercise this right to be mafkir. And that's the next Gemara Minayin. From whence do we derive the conclusion, the principle, that I can own something, it's my possession, I was konit, I inherited from my alter zeda, and Bezdin could come along and declare it hefk. And Rabbo said, this is the sugya of hefkir Bezdin hefk. So, if Yirtz Hashem, I don't want to make a promise, but as soon as they finish with my study, I am so discombobulated for months already that I don't have access to my svarim. We had a major flood over here. Then I will quote to you a wealth of material on this Yerushalmi that we're learning now about Hefker Bezin Hefker, and maybe you could access it even now while I'm speaking if you have Bar Ilan, or if you have another program, or maybe you have the Encyclopedia Talmudit itself. Yeah, my Bar Ilan has the entire Encyclopedia Talmudit. I mean, entire. Whatever they're up to. Kaf or Lamed, whatever. And if you look on the letter Hey, you'll find Hefker Bezdin Hefker. And he has a wealth of material there on Hefker Bezdin Hefker. I haven't seen it in 20 years. But one thing I remember. The basic issue of Hefker Bezdin Hefker is how far can Bezdin go? Can they take Reuven's ownership and transfer it to Shimon? Abracadabra. Or can they remove Reuven's private ownership and now it becomes Hefker? And this is going to have tremendous implications in terms of the laws of Maaseh. Why? Because Hefker potur min haMaaseh. And if I own a field on years 1, 2, 4, and 5, I have to separate Maaseh Sheni. And years 1 to 6, I have to separate Maaseh Rishon and give it to the Levi. However, if my produce is Hefker, and how much more so if my field is Hefker, and it's producing Hefker, I'm potur min haMaaseh. And the question is going to be, exactly at what point in the development of the pre is Hefker a poter min haMaaseh? Is it before Havah Shlish? Is it after Havah Shlish? But in any event, once it's Hefker, then who loses out? The Levium lose out. Now let's put the cards on the table. The Levium, from our perspective, are tzaddikim. And do we have any Levium? Oh yeah, John, you're a Levi, right? Okay, so we have at least one Levi in the audience. And the Levim are tzaddikim. They don't deserve to be cut out of their maaser. How far does Hefker Bezdin Hefker go? Because the implications are not just punishing the owner of the field who's violating the Issa Kilayim, but there are implications as far as Nebuch the Levim, who now will have no ability to collect maaser because Hefker is potur min haMaaseh. Okay. Now, the Gemara is going to go through two sources. One source is actually in Tanakh, in Sefer Ezra. And when you find something in Tanakh as a halachic derivation from Tanakh, that is binding. The Gemara later on is going to sort of circumvent that drasha that we're about to learn in the name of this brisa and come up with something that's more connected to Shavuos. And that's going to be a raya actually from one of the Amoraim about Shavuos in its relationship to an Ibriyar, to Ibur Shan. Because keep in mind, it's not relevant this year, but I think it's relevant next year, if I'm not mistaken, is that when you're Ma'abra the Shana, you add an extra month. So a year that normally would be 12 months now becomes 13 months. Okay, great. So far, so good. Except if it's Shavuos, that means we're adding an extra month of the Surim of Shavuos, which are manifold Surim in terms of planting, in terms of harvesting. You have to open up your fields for the poor people. And now you're cutting me out of an extra month, a 30-day month of Adar Sheni. This is also going to have repercussions as far as the Isur Chadash is concerned. Ibur Shana has a lot of repercussions, not just in terms of setting up Pesach B'Chodesh HaAviv. So, Dichsiv, Minayin, Shefker, Bezen, Hefker, Dichsiv, it says in Ezra, Kol Asher Lo Yavo, Lishlosh Sayomin, Katsas Hasorim Vazkenim. Okay, Rabosai, I'm going to test you, so to speak. I'm going to quiz you. What was the most fundamental issue in religious piety, or lack thereof, I should say, during the time of Ezra? All right, it starts with an I and ends with an E, I think. Okay, I can't see, Mitch, what you're saying. Anyway, it's intermarriage. People came on Aliyah with their shiksas. I mean, if Ezra was in America today, he would have a lot of work on his hands. Because, unfortunately, the problem of intermarriage still exists. So Ezra gathered together this Kenim, and he sent out a cruise notifying the people they have to all get together for a public drasha. He's going to, you know, just one second. Oh boy. So we're talking about a source for the halacha of Hefker Bezen Hefker. And the pasuk says that Ezra gathered together the troops. He gave them a 3-day notice. And he said, everybody has to show up. And he was going to give them a harangue about the fact that they have to divorce their wives. I wouldn't have wanted to be in Ezra's position at that point. And Kol Asher Lo Yavo, he threatened them. What punishment would they suffer if they didn't show up for this gigantic rally? L'shloshes Yom Katzas Asar Mazkenim. Yechram Kol Rechusho. Now the word Yechram here equals Hefker. And one of the questions that I want to raise is, why does the Pasuk in Ezra use the word Yechram as opposed to Hefker? It could have just said Hefker Kol Rechusho. And I have a suspicion that in biblical Hebrew, you might not find the word hefker. You'll always find the word yechram. V'hu yibodol mikahal agolo. And in any event, we see here clearly that such a person who refuses to show up and get the directive from Ezra to divorce his shiksa, his non-Jewish wife, in such a case, his yibodol mikahal eido, he'll, so to speak, be excommunicated from the Kohol. And we have to know what that excommunication means. But one thing is for sure, his rechush is going to be completely hefker. Now, As I said before, Hefker is potter from Maaseh. And the Yerushalmi in Masechta Terumos, in the very first chapter, quotes the following drasha. It says in Parshas Re'eh, Uba ha-Levi ki ein lo chelek v'nachla imach. When it comes to Maaseh, the Torah says that the Levi can come and collect the Maaseh, which means that no one in the balance of Klal Yisrael, if you're not a Levi, has rights to collect a Maaseh. Only the Levim have the right to collect a Maaseh. And the Yerushalmi derives from this pasuk that if you have something which anyone could collect, then it's not Maaseh. You're chayev to give Maaseh by transferring ownership from your field and your produce to the Levim, to Shevet Levim. Once you're not transferring ownership, and the reason why you're not is because it's already Hefker, so that you cannot in any way designate this Maaseh for the Levi. Why? Because it's out of your control. Once it's Hefker, anyone, even someone who's not a Levi, so the Torah says, Uba Levi, to teach us that since you are making it Mamon Levim, therefore you're chayv in Maaseh. Your obligation is to take your ownership and use your ownership to transfer rights to the Levi so that a Levi can come and collect the Maaseh. If, on the other hand, you don't have the ability to transfer those rights to the Levim because you don't have any rights. Everybody on the face of the globe has the same rights to these payrolls as you do, then it's not called Uba Levi. You cannot set it up and transfer it over to the Levi. So Hefker is potter from Maaseh. Now, the Gemara wants to know, how far does the authority of Beis Din derive from the pasuk in Ezra? How far does it go? And that's the next line in the Gemara. Minayin shehi p'turim in a Maaseh. All right, Beis Din was mafkir than a chassin. But does that go as far as making it potter from Maaseh? Now, Rabosa, at this point, we have to ask a fundamental question. What's the difference between one Hefker and the other? Hefker equals Hefker equals Hefker. The Gemara is postulating two categories of Hefker. There's one Hefker in which the Bailim themselves declare something Hefker. And there's another category of Hefker when Beis Din declares your property is Hefker. And then Afkamina is going to be whether you're potter min Maaseh. Only in the first case are you potter min Maaseh, not in the second case. What is going on over here? Is it Hefker or is it not Hefker? Does anybody have the right to take it or not? So apparently, the Gemara understood as a Havamina that although a Hefker in general is potter min Maaseh, Hefker Beis Din is a different entity. Now he here, I just want to, before I tell you what I think is going on in this sugya, I just want to point out that in the Masifta, he quotes Reb Shlomo Sirleo, the Rash Sirleo, who says that the issue here is Doraisa versus Durabanan. What happens? Before Beis Din is mafkir the nechasim, the karka and the sode, the status of the peros is tevel. And tevel is also Doraisa. So you've already got a chiyuv maser that was chal before Beis Din was mafkir. Once that chiyuv maser emerges, it generates an isu tevel. Does Beis Din have the authority to undermine and neutralize an Issa Tevel? Tevel, as you know, is an Issa Chamor. It's a Misa B'dei Shemayim. So it's very nice that Hefker Beis Din Hefker operates, but it still is a Drabanan. And a Drabanan does not have the power to undermine a Doraisa. Like we learned, if you recall, about Ein Shvus B'Migdash, that when there's a Shvus, then the Rabbanim can decide that in Mikdash we're not going to apply the Shavuos. But if it's a Malacha Doraisa, then even in the Beis HaMikdash it's awesome, because you cannot, you know, Beis Din, when they created an Isser, a Shavuos, they can decide they want to waive that Isser and limit it, but they can't undermine a Malacha Doraisa and allow you to do a Malacha Doraisa. So to allow you to eat this Tevel by declaring it a Hefker means that Beis Din is exercising an authority even on a Doraisa level, and that authority they don't have, or maybe they don't have. That's what the Gemara, according to Rashi Leo, is vacillating. When the Torah that we derive from Ezra invests in the Chachamim and the Beis Din, the authority to be Mafkir Nechasim, do they do so even as far as Doraisa is concerned, to remove an Eastern Tevel? That's the way that Rashi Leo learns this Gemara and what the Gemara is vacillating about. But I would like to suggest, Lefi Anias Daiti, that the Gemara is not asking about Hefker, Dirabbanan, and how or if it can impact on an Issa Doraisa. Again, that's the Rash Soleo. But rather, I think the Gemara is asking a fundamental question about Hefker and how Hefker operates. And it works like this. The very moment that the Iser Tevel is Chal, and it's generated by a Chiyuv Maaser, the Levim automatically gain a Zchus to collect that Maaser. So in Dine Momenos, we have a kind of a partnership. The owner of the field still owns the produce, but the Torah has already granted, once the Shem Tevel is Chal, monetary rights to the Levim. Now the Gemara is asking, how does Hefker Bezin Hefker work? It would be very nice if Hefker Bezin Hefker would work to allow other people, non-Levim, to collect the Maser. That's fine. I mean, to collect the produce. But can Hefker Bezin Hefker be Mafkia the Levim from Vezchus? If you have something that is objectively Hefker, which means that everybody on the face of the globe has equal rights to acquire ownership, that's when the Torah says it's not Ubal Levi, because the Levi has no special rights to Hefker. But the very source for the Ptur Hefker is the fact that the Levi has rights to these payrolls. And if Hefker undermines those rights because we're all in the same boat, we all have the same rights, then there's no Ptur of Hefker. That cannot apply, the Gemara thinks, in the case of Hefker Beis Din, because Hefker Beis Din Hefker would not in any way impinge and undermine the rights of the Levim once they've emerged as monetary rights to collect these payrolls. So if you have a situation of Hefker, which is objective Hefker, the Baal HaSod has declared that anybody can come along and take his produce, then everybody has equal rights, and therefore you cannot now be Mafresh Maser to create new rights on behalf of the Levi. But in a case where Beis Din comes along and they want to establish Hefker, and now the Levi says, well, I have rights to these payrolls, does Hefker, Beis Din Hefker, remove and undermine my rights to the payrolls? The Gemara thinks you're going to have to prove that to me. And our Mishnah here in Shkolin is predicated on the assumption that Beis Din has the ability to be mafkir the nechassim because of these ovrei avera who completely ignored the laws of kelayim. Wonderful, you want to punish them and make it hefker, that's fine. But you can't remove the levim who have rights to the tvua b'toras maser by making it hefker. You can make it hefker and remove the bailus of the owner of the field, so that now anyone could come knocking on the door and take the payrolls. But what about the Levim? does Hefker Bezen Hefker remove the rights of the Levim? If it's objective Hefker, then the Levim have access and rights to these payrolls like anybody else on the face of the earth. But if Bezen is being Mafkir, and they're saying, we're going to punish you and remove your ownership rights, does that mean that Bezen has the rights to undermine the position of the Levim insofar as they have a zchus in the payrolls? And the Gemara there feels that we have to find a source to prove that Hefker Bezen Hefker goes as far as removing the rights of the Levim to collect Maaser. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yonasan, Berei, the Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Acha, Shamal. Shamal, now again, you know, this is the language of the Yishalmi. Shamal means he derived it. From whence did he derive that Hefker Bezen Hefker could remove the rights of the Levim to Maaser? Min Hada, again a Yushalmi language, from the following source, which is a Braisa, a Tosefta Mesefta Sanhedrin. And now we're learning about Ibur Shana, to add an extra month by adding an Adar Sheni, and taking a month that has 12, taking a year that has 12 months and expanding it to 13 months. Ein Ma'abra Mesa Shana, Lo Bishvias, V'lo B'motzai Shvias. There's no Ibur Shana for the seventh year, nor the eighth year. As far as the seventh year is concerned, and I indicated this earlier, if Beis Din would add another Adar, it would mean that all the Surim of Shvias, of Avodas HaKarka, would now be extended for another month. And that was too much for the people. They could not possibly, they could not possibly refrain from Avodas HaKarka for another extra month. And by the way, you know, even in Israel today, those kibbutzim and yishuvim, like Poli Agud and all that, you know, Poli Agud is, I'm dating myself, but those yishuvim, Shalavim in those days, they were makbid on Shvius. It was a tremendous mesiras nefesh. Now you want to add another month? But what about Motzei Shvius? What about the eighth year? What's so bad about adding a second Adar to the eighth year? However, the Mishnah goes on, and the Tosefta goes on and says, Im Ibrua, b'dieved, if whatever, for whatever reason Bezin decided, or maybe mistakenly, they were Ma'abra the seventh or eighth year in the Shemitah cycle, I raise them with Berens. B'dieved, we validate the Ibur. Okay, now comes along Rabbi Yonasan, great Rabbi Yitzchak. And he says, V'chi chodesh echad shu mosif lo potter mimasros hu? We know that the seventh year, which is the year of Shemitah, is Potter Mimaser. And we're going to have to study the Makar for that, the source for that, but be that as it may. Now, when they added an extra month of Adar to Shvius, it has Kedusha Shvius, and it's Potter Mimaser. How does that operate? Adar Sheni is an invention of Beis Din. Who generates Adar Sheni? It's Beis Din. By virtue of the authority, as the Mishnah establishes at the very beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin, of Beis Din, to be Ma'abra the Shana. So we see that Hefker Beis Din Hefker applies even to generate a Ptur Maser, because that extra month that they added, that Beis Din added to the year to be Ma'abra the Shana, is Potur Min HaMaser. And therefore we derive from this Tosefta the conclusion that Hefker Bezen Hefker is Potem in a Maser. Now again, what we have to ask here is, how did Rabbi Yonasan know such a thing? Maybe the extra month of Adar would not be Potem in a Maser. But apparently it was a simple, unquestionable premise in Rabbi Yonasan's mindset that the entire year of Shvius is part of an Amasa. We're not going to say, well, you know what? Within the context of the year of Shvius, we're going to pull out the month of Adar Sheni And we're going to say, oh, Adar Sheni is chayiv in shviyas. It's chayiv in maaser. No, no, no. The whole year, the entire year from beginning to end, is potum in a maaser. Now again, the Gemara is going to reject Rabbi Yonason's proof and argue that maybe during that extra month there will be a chiyuv maaser, but now the Gemara goes on a digression. Adkanon shviyas, motzi shviyas mai, I understand very well that they didn't want to add through Iber Shana an extra month of shviyas, because that would extend the Isra Avodas Karka for an extra month, motzi shviyas mai. What was the logic that inhibited the Chachamim from being Ma'abar the eighth year in the Shviyas? Om Rabbi Bon, Shalol Rabos be'Isur Chadosh. And now we have an overlap of Shviyas, Masros, Chadosh, and Iber Shana. All together, until we get back to Ezra, and the punishment for those who didn't show up for the three-day, the conference. What is the relationship here between Isur Chadosh? Now, I know I'm going over time, so if you cannot stay, just, I have a shiur in 5 minutes, but we lost about a half hour, so I want to fill it. He says the following. What happens is that the last year of produce was the sixth year. And then we had the year of Shviyas, the seventh year. On the eighth year, what's going to happen is that they're going to start on the eighth year to resume the agricultural activities, in this case what we call Zriyas HaTvuah, and that's going to happen immediately after Shemitah is over. Now, Shemitah ends, obviously, at the end of the summer months. And we're going to plant the fields at the beginning of the eighth year. It's going to grow during the winter. And that produce is chadash until the 16th of Nisan, at the time that they brought the Omer, the date of the Omer. So now what happens is, you've got an extra month now of Isur Shviyas. I'm sorry, of Isur Chadosh. Why? Because by adding an extra Adar, which is wedged between Adar Aleph and Nisan, you've pushed off that date of the Omer by one full month. So the Isur Chadosh is now extended for a full month. Now, in a normal year, that's going to always happen. Whenever the Beis Din is Ma'abar the Shana, they are postponing the heter of Yashan, of Omer, for another month, extending the Isur. But that doesn't bother me on any other year. It bothers me on the eighth year, because in the eighth year, they're living off the produce, until the Isur Kodesh is removed, of the sixth year, because there's no produce in the seventh year. That's all, been eaten up by the poor people. And you didn't plant anything in the seventh year. So whatever you manage to store from the sixth year is going to support you during the seventh and eighth year. And now you're eagerly waiting for the moment that you can eat the produce of the eighth year. And now you're going to zap it with an extra month of an Isur Chadosh that we can't do. Okay, now we're going to stop here at Rabbi Zeira, B'Shem Rabbi Elazar. And the Gemara is then going to ask about Iber Shana Bismanenu and whether or not we can go through Iber Shana and the Shemitah is not Noeg, but there is Iber Shana. So the next piece of Lumbus that we have to get into is what's the relationship between Iber Shana and the Isur Shviyas? What is going to terminate the Isur Shviyas at a time period when the halacha and the power of Iber Shana is still extant? So the conditions for Shviyas have terminated, but we still have the power to be Ma'abar the Shana. Now we're not in any way inhibited by the laws of Shviyas, so therefore we could be Ma'abar the Shana during Shviyas and Shminis. And then the Gemara is going to get back, swing back to the Raya. of Rabbi Yonasan from Shvius and try to refute that proof. Okay, then again, thank you for persevering, and the Mirtz Hashem, hopefully by tomorrow we'll sort out this whole internet problem. All right, call two.